This week, good people, is an episode I'm quite excited about. My journalistic instincts are positively tingling. If I had a moustache, it would be a quiver with anticipation. My guest this week is a passionate and talented bespoke tailor who's not really had his story put out there as yet, but a fascinating story it is. His name is Oliver Cross, and he's the head cutter at Benson & Clegg, a Royal Warrant-holding bespoke tailor on Piccadilly Arcade in London's West End. Much like Ollie himself, it's an unassuming business, and over the past 2 years, the team there have been quietly beavering away behind the scenes to freshen up Benson & Clegg and move the brand forward. Ollie's role as the company's most senior craftsman is instrumental to this change in step. So without further ado, let's see what he has to tell us. Well, here we are, Mr. Oliver Cross.
Hello, Al.
Welcome to Hank Cut Radio. Big Al. Yeah, I love it. Big legs, Al.
Which
have already come up.
Like your waist.
let's paint a picture for listeners. I'm really enjoying this because we're tucked away in what is almost a gentleman's club.
It is, in theory.
A gentleman's club vibe on the top floor of the newly refurbished Benson & Clegg shop on the Piccadilly Arcade. And it's great in here. Mr. Cross has his cutting bench.
I do indeed.
And very importantly, a whiskey bar.
Yeah, indeed.
Which facilitates expert cutting, I'm sure. And it's great up here. It's very atmospheric. We're enjoying it. Now,
we can dim the lights.
Oh, look at this.
A bit more of a moodier atmosphere for the evening.
Mood lighting.
Yeah, absolutely. It's important. Lighting's important.
Light is always important. Exactly. We've got a velvet jacket to our side here, a beautiful bespoke velvet jacket that's been basted, and it's now glistening.
Indeed, yeah.
Anyway,
it's shining.
Before I waffle on anymore.
No, don't worry.
This conversation is going to be a little bit of a journey of discovery for me.
Okay.
Because I'm ashamed to say, as you know, I only visited Benson & Clegg for the first time a few months ago.
Yes, you did.
And we only met a few months ago. Yeah. And you brought vintage blazer back to life for me.
Indeed, you're wearing it?
Absolutely.
Good.
Of course I am.
I've still got your buttons.
Have you?
The old ones.
Bless you.
I'm going to sell them on eBay.
But, yeah, so you should. Too, right? Yeah. Why not? You help me out. Yeah. This is about hearing about your story. You are, I think, a bit of an unsung hero of British Bespoke at the moment.
Wow.
You're very quietly beavering away, doing really stunning work.
Trying.
And I feel like we have an opportunity to find out what motivates you, what Benson & Clegg is up to.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
Very exciting times.
Let's start with a big question that we can unpick. What made you want to be a tailor? What makes anyone want to be a tailor today?
Well, mine was just it wasn't an ordinary path at all. I came to London on a bit of a Beatles pilgrimage.
Because you're a big Beatles fan.
I'm a massive Beatles fan. I'm a big fan of 1960s music, late 1960s, early 70s music. That's sort of where my inspirations lie. And naturally, you sort of progressively get into that. And we came to London. A friend, Steve now lives in California, the Git. But yeah, Steve and I came to London and visited the hot spots that were sort of Beatles memorabilia and places. So we were Baker Street, went to St John's Wood, visited Abbey Road, walked across it barefoot, just like Sir Paul McCartney did.
With your flares on.
With my flares on and cigarette in hand.
Too right. And
then, after milling about, went to Scotch of St James, checked out that gaff down there. And finished off on Savile Row, and being a boy from Worcestershire, Redditch, didn't really have any know about Savile Row, didn't know it existed. And we were obviously looking at where the Beatles had performed their last ever live performance in 1969.
Which shop was that? It's on the roof.
That's now the Abercrombie Kids store.
Ugh.
So, yes.
Okay, jolly good. Yes.
At least it's open so you can see in the doors now.
Yes.
You know, which is quite nice. So kind of had a photo in the doorway there and sort of milling around down Savile Row and stopped outside Deej and Skinner and looked down and I could see a guy sewing a ceremonial military tunic. And I thought, wow, I'm in Mayfair and there's this sort of Dickensian clothing production going on in the centre of Mayfair, which was just, it seemed so bizarre, it didn't connect. And it was that year I was bought a book on Savile Row, and I read it back to front, and it was London Cut by James Sherwood.
Very good book.
Very good book. And as somebody that knew absolutely zero about tailoring and Savile Row, it really gave me a great insight into who was dressed on Savile Row. It really opened my eyes. Presidents, you know, politicians, and importantly for me at the time, you know, they dressed Elton John, Mick Jagger, Paul McCartney, Ringo Starr, you know,
yeah.
John Lennon had clothes made. And obviously that then led me into Tommy Nutter and reading about Tommy Nutter, Edward Sexton, Roy Chitterborough, Joe Morgan, and sort of fell in love with that late 1960s.
The rock and roll tailoring.
Belly on the lapels, the rock and roll tailoring, yeah. Mm. But also an affinity with the craft. You know, I've always been a creative person, never really academic. Mm. And creatively, it appealed to me that these suits were made by hand, and I just fell in love with it. I've always loved clothes.
But you didn't have a conventional route to your apprenticeship on Savile Row, did you?
Not at all. So I suppose let's fast forward sort of 4 or 5 years. 21 years old, Vivian, my other half, fell pregnant with our daughter, Evie Lola. 21's quite a young age to sort of be a father.
Mm.
Living in the Midlands, working for an independent financial advisor. Sort of submitting applications, 9-to-5 job, sea of hatchback cars outside.
Yeah, not,
you know,
the dream.
Not the dream at all. Meanwhile, I've sort of got this burning desire to be a tailor.
It's amazing that was with you for so many years.
Yeah, absolutely. It just spiraled. You know, initially it was, you know, when I get married eventually, I'm still not married for the record, but when I get married, you know, I want the Savile Row suit. And that just spiraled into, you know, I want to learn how to make clothes myself. I want to learn how to, you know, alter my own clothes. And that was really appealing. I remember buying an old Yves Saint Laurent suit off eBay and altering it and getting such joy from altering this. I only took it on the centre back and took the waist and let the waist out on the trousers. But, you know, I wore that with joy.
Mm.
And then later on, I bought a Tom Ford suit in a charity auction that was pre-owned by David Walliams.
Oh!
Yeah, I know. But it fit me a dream. Fit me a dream. I since saw David, strangely, about 4 years later in Tom Ford in Harrods, and sort of stupidly decided to tell
him
this.
Suit.
And it really freaked him out. In a stalkerish fashion. I'm in Tom Ford.
I've got your suit.
He's there. And I was like, yeah. I've got your I own your suit, yeah. So, and he sort of looked me up and down and said, you're not my size. But no, I'm a forever growing lad. So, but so fast forward. So I've got my daughter, you know, Evie's at 2 or 3. Viv, my other half, she's just finished her post-graduation degree, and she's ready to get a job. And
as a
primary school teacher. And I remember getting home at 5:20, bang, you know, finished work at 5:00. In the car, 20 minutes home.
Not a second longer.
Not a second longer. sort of took my tie off and said, right, my turn. She said, what do you mean your turn? I said, well, it's time for me to change my career. You know, I don't want to be a miserable dad. I'm not happy in my life. I'm not happy where we live. You know, love London. And wanted to be a tailor. So I actually went down the Yellow Pages. I found a little design centre called the Inkbarrow Design Centre. Now, Inkbarrow is famous for the Archers. You know the Archers radio program?
Oh, that's where it's based. That's where it is.
Yeah, so it's a little village, tiny little village. Spoke with this wonderful woman called Brenda Killigrew that ran this design centre and sort of spoke to her. And she said, we can sort of tailor a course to your needs.
Right.
Excuse the pun.
Ah.
And I said, well, you know, ultimately I want to be a Savile Row tailor. And she says, you can do that. You know, and I thought, wow, this 1 hour phone call with this woman, she's already telling me that I can do the golden shears, I can, you know, work with a tailor.
Thinking about it, that is quite extraordinary, isn't it? Because
yeah.
if you've put off pursuing this path for so many years, presumably there's a lot of doubt in your mind. It's a massive change for your family.
Yeah.
If that first conversation had been a negative conversation, you might not have done it.
Not at all.
But
I did get a lot of negative feedback about the initial jump, because obviously I was in a career that was potentially a steady career, you know, settled with daughter. And so it wasn't a great, well, it was a great move, but it didn't seem like a great move at the time to sort of be starting a career in financial services and then changing. But I just ended up there because I needed a job and I needed to fund my family.
Yeah.
And it was never going to be permanent. So...
Found the design centre.
Found the design centre. Working full-time in financial services. Decided to embark on a course 2 nights a week at the design centre. I'm working in a chip shop as well. I've been working in chip shops since I was 15. Loved it. It's a great job.
Good
my
fun.
Second favourite job to this one. Great fun. And kept a Friday on. So I was working full-time 2 nights a week doing my college. Chip shop on a Friday night. And met Lawrence Robinson of... Robinson,
which is a lovely little bespoke tailors in Ulster. I've no idea.
No.
We'll you can go away and look it up, listeners.
Yeah.
So it's a great little tailor.
It's in Warwickshire, and they're a fourth generation family tailors. Do everything: make trousers, press, hand finish their own work. You know, Lawrence makes everything. And Lawrence very kindly decided, you know, he saw some interest in me and decided, yeah, come after work 1 night a week and a Saturday morning, and I'll show you the ropes. I'll teach you how to pad a collar. I'll teach you how to make a jetted pocket, you know, and throughout the stages, we'll eventually make a jacket and a pair of trousers. And that's exactly what we did. And my first jacket was a single-breasted peak lapel, straight away inspired by Nutter.
Yeah.
You know, the first thing I wanted to make was just the uber belly on the lapel. And it was great. The handwork's a little bit shoddy, but it was my first, you know, it was a beautiful garment
to make.
It's
a thing of pride.
It was. And Lawrence, you know, owe him a million because he really gave me a great grounding into understanding what went into tailoring and the craft. And I just fell in love with it from that point on.
Yeah.
So in the interim, so sorry, I keep waffling. But
no, I'm loving it. Please do.
So in the interim, Viv and I were coming to London because ultimately, in order to have a successful career in tailoring, in my eyes, you have to be in London.
Yeah.
You have to be in and around Savile Row. So we would come and stay for a night. And part of the objective of the trip was for me to go down Savile Row and knock on doors and just introduce myself and basically chew the ear off cutters and owners of the businesses. And you know, initially it can be quite intimidating to walk into those shops, but you know, they're real people behind those doors, and it's a fantastic trade. Sorry,
that's all right. bit of background noise from the shop.
Yeah, absolutely, it's real
indeed.
And I spoke to David Taub many times. I spoke to Patrick Grant of Norton and Sons, Tony Martin, who was here at Benson & Clegg. You know, many people, Terry Haste, Kent Haste and Lacter.
All big names.
All the big names. And I'd pop in and I was getting little sort of trinkets of information from each tailor and I'd take it away. And, you know, I met David 3 or 4 times. David was at Maurice Sedwell at the time. And a very unassuming guy, you know, David, really... an artist at his trade.
A quick shout out to David, actually, who is now the head cutter at Gieves and Hawkes.
Absolutely, yeah.
For me, for what it's worth, he is one of the... I would go as far as calling him a genius.
Yes, he's certainly an artist.
Absolutely. The creativity behind Gieves and Hawkes' bespoke work now is extraordinary.
Yes, yeah.
And the quality of it
is finesse.
Second to none.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Perfection. So... you know, talking to the right people.
Yeah.
And David said, look, you know, what you're doing sounds great. Have you thought about enrolling at London College of Fashion to do bespoke tailoring? Just to show your commitment and explain the fact that in order for somebody to take you on, you know, he said, you do get a lot of charlatans walking in the door thinking, I want to be a tailor, it's a great trade. And it's hard to sort of filter them out, who's legit, who's not. So immediately I took that advice and went and enrolled at London College of Fashion. And I thought, well, full-time degree, mature student. This way, obviously, we could get a bit of funding, but I can quit my job in financial services. I can move my family to London. Viv can get a job as a primary school teacher, and I can do my degree. And then hopefully from there, I'll work on Savile Row, get an apprenticeship or you know, be taught under a cutter.
That's another massive step change, isn't it?
Oh, it's great. It didn't go as planned.
Okay.
No, it didn't go as planned. We Viv and I were living in a house which we sold. We intended to move in 2011. Viv unfortunately didn't secure a job, and then we had to stay with my mum. So we moved in with my mum for a year with Evie. I mean, fortunately, mum had some space.
And this is while you're training.
This is whilst I was commuting to London.
Oh, God, yeah, so okay. To do my degree. Your mum isn't in London. No, mum's still in the Midlands.
Yeah.
God, so you commuted for
a
year.
So commuting, yeah, away from EV, and Viv was doing bits of supply work. So that year was a tough year.
Yeah.
It was a really tough year. But fortunately, you know, the year after, she was offered three jobs in one day. it was crazy. We decided to... I was following Permanent Style at the time. I've been following Permanent Style for years, actually.
Yes.
And I'd spoken to Simon at various events. First time I was introduced to Simon was at the Master Shears. And I'd met Simon, I was introduced to Simon there, and I knew Simon had children. And I dropped Simon an email, actually, because not coming from London, where do you sort of live? There's so many different boroughs, and we've got a daughter of school age, and, you know, and Simon just sort of said, you know, South East London's a lovely leafy suburb, you know. So we looked at East Dulwich, and we ended up in Forest Hill, 2012, and we've been there since, which was excellent. So doing my degree, I was working at a hat shop called Laird Hatters to get some extra pocket money to sort of feed my family.
I'm really humbled listening to this, Ollie, because you really flogged yourself to get there, didn't you?
I wanted it, but the thing about tailoring, there's no specific career. It's not like becoming a doctor or a veterinary surgeon, whereas you go and you do your 7 years, and everybody sort of has to find their own path into tailoring.
Yeah.
And I just had an unconventional path, but...
Yeah, but it's two jobs or three jobs all the time, uprooting your family, taking these huge risks. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, it was a fun time. So, and you do. I don't appreciate it now because it's the past, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm happy where I am now. I'm in a good place. But yeah, the journey didn't stop there, and I was doing my...
More atmosphere.
Yeah, absolutely. I always said to myself, the only reason I was on that course doing the degree, I didn't want the degree, but what I wanted was a foot in the door. And priority for me was Savile Row. If I could get a position on Savile Row, I would leave. I would leave on day one. And it took me 2 years, and I was constantly visiting Savile Row. Patrick Grant very kindly would give me his time now and again when he spoke to Richard Anderson. Ken Haston Lacta, I remember one day I was feeling really down because sort of, I got told I was a little old for the trade and I might have missed the boat, and kind of really down. And
that's gutting.
Yeah, it was gutting. Sort of stumbled down to Benson and Clegg and spoke to Tony Martin, and Tony had mentioned that Ken Austin, who was the previous cutter, was retiring that year. And he said, if you can wait till September, I can take you on. But, you know, I couldn't wait. I needed a position. Tony said, go and speak to Paul Monday at Mayor and Mortimer, Paul and Brian. So Mayor and Mortimer, Sackville Street, big frosted window.
Brilliant, very storied.
Very
storied.
Absolutely steeped in history.
But very discreet. I doubt many people will be familiar with them as a house.
Not at all. I mean, check their Instagram out, Google them. They've got some serious history. I mean, 1790 was when they were sort of established, even before. But it was a great opportunity. I had a chat to Paul and Brian. They said, we are looking for somebody. Would you mind doing 1 or 2 days a week work experience? So I thought, great.
You're in.
I'm in. So this is it. And within 3 months, they'd employed me full time as a cutter, as an undercutter. And very, very kindly, Malcolm Plews had sort of semi-retired and left from Wellston Jeffries. But obviously his customers wouldn't allow him to retire.
Yeah.
So
too right.
Found himself still in the trade and needed a business to operate from.
And Mayor and Mortimer was it.
And Mayor and Mortimer was it.
And he trained you.
And Malcolm trained me, yeah. So the deal was that Malcolm would train me in return for him to sort of use their space. And by gosh, was that a gift from God.
Yeah. Let's paint a picture of Malcolm now for listeners that aren't as quite geeky as I am
on
Savile Row.
Yeah, yeah.
Malcolm Plews is one of those names a bit like Edward Sexton.
Absolutely, yeah.
Who is of that generation.
Of that ilk, of that generation.
Technical master.
Really technical master.
A technical innovator in tailoring terms, I think, as well.
Very much so, yeah. He used to cut all the flares for all the old Gieves and Hawks cutters in the 60s because they didn't know how to cut flares. And Malcolm was the type of guy that would, you know, dedicated his life to the trade. And would go away and would work late in the night and sort of establish and read all these books and manipulate patterns to make interesting things. And that was really, you know, he's still like that today.
That's rare, isn't it?
Yeah. He cries when he talks about tailoring. That's how passionate he is. And that is so, I mean, you know, I hope he doesn't mind me saying, Malcolm's in his 70s, but you talk to him and it's like he's only been in tailoring for a day because the passion is still so strong.
That is extraordinary.
Really strong.
I've never met him, but the only experience I have of his work, actually, funnily enough, was in here because you borrowed a frock coat of his.
Gosh, wasn't that
which I happened to stumble in and see.
I wish I could have took credit for that.
Guys, I'm telling you, this frock coat was out of this world. The work and the pattern work and the panelling on it.
Yeah.
Oh.
It was phenomenal.
Yeah.
It was Regency at its best.
Absolutely.
You know, it was gorgeous.
But you'd put it on.
Inverted pleats in the side seams, hidden pockets.
Of silk and velvet inlay collars.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what technical term is. but loads of stuff going on.
Laid on lapels and laid on top collars.
Laid on lapels. There we go. I've learned something. Mm. But anyway, so you that was finally after years and years and years of pushing for this.
It began.
So how did you go from there to Benson and Clegg then?
So I was happy at Mayor and Mortimer, and I'd learned there for 4 years and sort of had built up my own small customer book. I mean, it wasn't an apprenticeship because I was sort of doing one day a week with Malcolm, learning the cutting side, and then doing all my fittings with Paul Mundane and Brian Lewis and sort of shadowing and going over that. But built up, you know, from sort of absorbing information from three different cutters that have sort of got three different styles, it was a great grounding for me. And going down to Malcolm's one-on-one, you know, what you learn in one day there was just like spending a month with a cutter. It was just phenomenal. And he sort of simplified the system and made things so simple and easy because he's done the hard work. And, you know, but the important thing, and Malcolm really installed this into me, is it's all good learning to cut the patterns, but figuration is where the skill lies.
So what's figuration?
Figuration. You need to study figuration. So you know, I can look slightly bizarre when I'm studying figuration with a customer because you sort of peek up behind them and look at the shoulder alignment in their mirror. You stand on, you know, profile to the customer and sort of feel their back and feel their ribs, feel under their arms to see where the sort of body is. You know, is their chest sort of tubular? Is it flat? Do they have prominent blades?
And is the logic there that taking measures will only get you so far?
Yes. And then applying the figuration. So an easy one straight away is obviously, which is quite a nice easy one to spot, is whether somebody's down right or down left on a shoulder, or high right or high left. You know, applying that cut initially to the pattern, you're going to get so far with that fitting, you know, and it's going to eliminate a problem straight away. So studying figuration does help you, you know, whether they're sway back, prominent, sort of like myself.
Love all the corpulent terminology.
Corpulent. So it was really, you know, he's a really, really great teacher. And I got a text out of the blue from Mark Gordon. And word had got out that Tony Martin was off to Dunhill in New York.
Right, so all of a sudden at Benson and Clegg, because I should say Martin is one of the directors.
He was, yeah, exactly. What? So, and then, so Tony had left, and they were kind of left with no cutter. His time was
and the work piling short. Up.
Yeah. and I was happy at Mayor and Mortimer. You know, did I want to move? I'm not so sure. I think I was just. Let's just say, you know, I was open to opportunity.
Yeah.
And I came and had a chat with Mark, and straight away, Mark and I are of a similar age, and Mark explained to me how he wants to push the business forward, and that he's looking for somebody, a young blood, to help him on the creative side, you know, sort of reignite the tailoring side of the business and help to develop it and bring it to a current time.
Could you just, because I think Benson & Clegg is one of those fabulous little British heritage brands that if you know, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's probably, it's pretty niche, even by heritage standards.
Yeah.
So paint a picture for me of the house very briefly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what I knew Benson & Clegg were tailors, but we used to get buttons, blazer buttons. We manufacture blazer buttons. We have a Royal Warrant for the Prince of Wales for military neckwear, buttons and badges. I knew that was a big side of the business, and the tailoring, you know, it sort of it, it didn't seem to fuse together.
With the military bit.
Yeah, they almost seemed like two separate businesses almost. So we're going back to your question, sorry.
That's all right. Benson Clegg was founded when?
1937. By, here we are, Mr. Clegg, Mr. Benson.
There they are on the
Mr.
wall.
Mr. Clegg, Mr. Benson were cutters of Halls and Curtis, which was a fabulous tailors of its time.
Now a pretty mainstream shirt maker.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right.
I didn't know that
Halls and Curtis was a tailor's.
They were a big player, really big player in the tailoring game.
God, what a different business now.
Absolutely. So they left and set up a little shop, a club lounge shop, on Berry Street round the corner. And they must have been good cutters because King George VI decided to go with them as a customer.
Pretty
from
cool.
Halls and Curtis. So that was a great start for them.
In the 30s, if you've got a royal, you're set.
Absolutely,
yeah,
very much so. And then, you know, was said to have placed an order in the first week of their business, you know, in operating business. And so things really took off for them. And they wanted to sort of set up a tailoring shop as a sort of club lounge where customers could sort of come and hang out. And you know, so it wasn't as stuffy as say, your regular tailor shop.
Yeah, with its closed curtains.
Yeah, exactly. So they wanted a bit more of a welcoming atmosphere. And that's where we are today. You know, we've pulled that back. And naturally, everybody here, we've got a great team. Mark, Mark's the owner, Mark Gordon. We've got Jonathan Hewitt. He helps us run the shop and oversees sort of, he's overseeing made-to-measure side of the business. Steve's our marketing guy. Steve's coming on full time very soon because marketing, as we know, is something that every business needs to have in order to, you know, have a word of mouth
now.
And progress. So it's just about moving forward. We've got a really dynamic young team, and you know, we're close and we all share each other's ideas and we're all inspired by different things, which is great because you get a really good sort of collection of ideas from all different angles.
Yeah, and so, passion, I guess.
Absolutely.
You know, you're all in this to really sort of move the business forward.
Yeah.
Well, that is very exciting.
It is. And you know, what's important to us is, and it sort of goes back to service. And I think I was explaining to you before, Al, you know, we're very, very accommodating people.
Mm.
We had three Norwegians in. They were staying at the In and Out Club, and they came in. It's before the bar actually, but I had some gin and tonics, and I gave them all a gin and tonic and all two, and they ended up staying for 2.5 hours, which is, you know, it's brilliant. And all three of them measured them all up for a blazer, and I got an email from each one of them after to explain how informal it was, how I made them feel comfortable, how welcoming we were, and I just thought, well, it comes so natural to us to be informal in a semi-formal environment. You know, why don't we hone in on that? And this is clearly what people want.
Particularly when tailoring, particularly Savile Row tailoring, is still occasionally accused of being a very formidable, scary thing to embrace. I think a lot of guys get put off the idea of bespoke because they don't know what the experience is going to be like
behind the door.
Behind the door.
Yeah. I mean, they advice to people, walk in there, you know, like I said to you, they are real people in those shops and very grounded.
But see, I would go even one step further with the journey that I've been on, which is, I guess this applies to all retail, really, because it has happened to me very, very occasionally in German Street brands, etc., is if you walk in there and they're not friendly to you, they've just lost an order.
Yes.
You learn pretty
quickly
where you want to be.
Yeah.
So it's about having the confidence, even if you spend a morning going into six different tailor shops and then picking the one that you feel just organically you're into the most, you're in the position of power as the guy walking in.
Exactly.
I think guys get quite scared of that idea as well.
No.
But you don't have to worry if they come to you, do they?
Well, this is it.
You're a friendly
this is
bunch.
It. Absolutely. I mean, I'm a big bearded sort of burly guy. great at hugs.
Great, very great at hugs.
Always give you a hug.
Can attest to that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, that is what's important to me is just making people feel comfortable, regardless of who you are and where you're from.
And I guess that translates to the clothing and your the way that you will work with a client to dress them as well.
Absolutely.
There's not you do have a house style, but you don't insist upon it.
Not exactly. So, you know, there is a house style here, which is very much a West End style of tailoring. It's a roped shoulder. I like to cut a high waist because I find that going into the seat, you get a really elegant waistline into the skirt. Obviously, a nice high armhole for movement. Nice sort of A-line skirt, good length of coat.
And you do fabulous lapels, which are shaped in reference to the old military jackets.
Exactly, yeah.
We've Messrs. B and C were cutting.
It's various different lapel styles, but we do a nice sort of horizontal peak lapel.
Which
works really, really
and
nice.
And actually our mutual friend Fabio
Atanasio
just
yes.
had a stunning blazer it with is. That lapel on it.
Yeah, it's really very fun making for Fabio. But and he was adamant that he wanted that style, which is excellent because that's the pinnacle of what we do.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, tailoring is at the end of it is a hobby. It is something I'm passionate about. I love a challenge. And don't get me wrong, you know, customers can be a challenge, and there's nothing more satisfying than making a garment that a customer had in their mind, and that's a big thing for me is and you know I always sort of try and project to the customer that don't ignore my appearance, you know, my appearance is me, ignore my 5-inch lapels and you know this is me, I'm not gonna dress you up like this. And it's important to get into the customer's head. You can really tell by body language, looking at them in the mirror, when you're doing the fittings. You can tell if they're comfortable or not. And I talk to my customers all the time, and it's probably bad. Some tailors probably say I shouldn't, but I tell them exactly what I'm doing. I'll tell them exactly that this is riding up. You know, we need to give you a bigger corpulent cut, or, you know, we need to take some out the back, we need to pass the back. I explain everything because I think it instills confidence in me as well
as a technician
and it's just beautiful to just see the production of that garment from start to finish and eventually being worn, you
know? And hopefully worn for decades. Yeah,
they're built to last, you know. They're inexpensive in comparison to the amount of time you will get and amount of wear you will get out of a bespoke garment.
Absolutely. And even the lovely vintage blazer that you fettled for me, that thing's 2 years older than I am. And it's probably got another 5 or 6 years wear in it now, thanks to your
problem.
Handiwork.
Yeah.
I'm loving your positivity.
Thank you.
Very, very... I love the sense of warmth in here at Benson & Clegg. It's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on. But I also want to ask a thorny question.
A thorny question?
The irritating journalist in me wants to ask a thorny question. Because there is often a lot of negativity around Savile Row and British tailoring today and the state of the industry and failure to modernise and blah, blah, blah. Ready-to-wear is getting better, etc., etc. Is tailoring going through an identity crisis, or do you think that's just utter nonsense?
I think it's utter nonsense. I think it's the social media now, and it's a good thing and it's a bad thing. You know, guys have got more of an idea of what they want to look like. Well, you know, once upon a time they would have relied on their tailor to dress them, whereas now they'll come in and they've got photos of an influencer. And they want that jacket. They want this pleated trouser with this long extension. They want, you know, there's certain elements. They know what they want. But that's not to say the suit's dead. I mean, in actual fact, I think tailoring is on the up. I think it's booming. I think that, you know, look how many guys are wearing jackets now, regardless of, okay, it might be off the peg. But there's certainly a bigger awareness, I think, of bespoke garments.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what most men aspire to own eventually. You know, the Savile Row is inundated with apprentices at the moment. The Savile Row Bespoke Association is fantastic. It's sort of seen through 82 apprenticeships since the inception, which is great. It'd be better if we had more government support on that. So there are a lot of young people in the trade, and I don't think the suit is dying. I think British construction is something that has been around for 200 plus years, and it's built to last. You know, it's not going anywhere. Obviously, we are inspired by other styles now. You know, Neapolitan tailoring, for example, very easy to access online, very easy to see when a trunk show is going to be held in town, are a lot cheaper than Savile Row. But ultimately, it's not a Savile Row bespoke suit. You know, it's not that structured with all that handwork in the lapels, all the padding in the chest. It's a different type of tailoring.
Mm.
I don't think it's going through an identity crisis. I just think people are more comfortable with wearing tailoring now.
Are you finding that the kind of garments that men are ordering is changing?
Naturally, you know, I'm speaking from working in two companies, so I'm not speaking on behalf of Savile Row, but you know, I'm finding guys want more versatility out of their clothing. You know, the three-way suit, for example, you know, making a three-piece suit in a bit of a Larry cloth that all together would look really quite dandy, but worn individually, work as really muted pieces.
That's really interesting. So it's almost like the bang for your buck bespoke suit.
Absolutely.
This idea
and
of...
And I don't blame them.
No. You know? To be fair, I've started doing that.
Good.
I've had a few checked made-to-measure numbers recently, yeah, as three pieces, and I maybe only wear it as a three-piece suit 3-4 times a year.
Exactly.
But the jacket with
it's
a pair of plain flannels.
It's when you want to make a statement and you wear it all together. But
that's quite an interesting idea. What did you call that?
The three-way suit.
The three-way
suit. Yeah.
I like that. That's a thing. We should get on that.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Okay, so men are comfortable with the construction, they're comfortable with the idea of Savile Row, but they perhaps want something that is not punchy looking.
I mean, I'm a customer of mine at the moment. He wants an inset sleeve head, something we don't do, something that's not under our house style. Would we do it? Yes, we do. You know, we can do it. I've got an expert coat maker, you know, and it's nice to work out how much crown we need to take off the sleeve head there, and we work together to get that and execute it as well as we possibly can. And it's really fun doing things like that, which is why I don't turn it down. You know, if somebody wants a drape chest, if somebody wants a straight lapel with no belly on, we're more than happy to do it.
Cool.
You know, because we can.
Love it.
Yeah.
And not everywhere can, I guess. Well, very few places can.
Well, maybe they're very adamant to their house style. But I think, you know, we certainly do have a house style. It's certainly a flattering look. But if there's something else you want, I've got customers from other you know, houses, and I'm making them to look to that style because that's what they like to wear.
Cool.
So, you know, I don't see it as selling out or anything like that. It's just a testament to our skills and what we can do.
The other thing to flag, of course, for listeners who may not perhaps be in the bespoke market, is you have a great made-to-measure service, but you've also just launched a ready-to-wear capsule collection.
That was fun.
Was
that
it?
That was fun, yeah. Well, it's something... So when I came to Big Benson Clegg, we had an offering, and unfortunately it wasn't necessarily garments exclusive to us. You know, they weren't crafted by us, the pattern wasn't designed by us, and it was a project that I felt we needed to get up and running, and so I figured, well, I can cut a jacket, let's try and cut a 40 block to fit a regular person, and by gosh it was difficult. So having the samples made, and we get them made in East London. So having a sample made and seeing sort of how that would fit on various different 40s, you know, because you might be a 40 chest, but equally the next guy who's a 40 chest might be a totally different figure, sloping shoulders. He might, you know, he might have a flatter chest as opposed to a more sort of prominent chest. So playing about with the pattern was fun. That took a while, took about 3 to 4 months.
Yeah.
Obviously in between doing all my bespoke and stuff, but... Yeah, and then eventually came up with a pattern that seemed to... I mean, you try. I remember slipping
on
you when you
came in. Yeah, they're a
really
good fit.
They seem to be really nice, and you know, it works for bigger guys like myself as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the shape's there, and that incorporates a sort of house style. You know, it's a notch lapel. I've put a bit of belly on it just to stylize it, which I feel looks really cool. you know, it works a lot. And customers, when they see it, they think, oh, but when they try it on, it's such a flattering look. So we did that in a Holland and Sherry.
The Sherry Tweed.
The Sherry Tweed, yeah. So it's the one with the silk in.
They're such good cloth.
It's a lovely cloth. Really, really robust, really hard wearing.
I keep looking at their Donegals. There's a gold one with like red and green in it.
Imagine accessorizing that. It's so easy.
Sports
so
coat
cool.
Yeah. And that. Yeah, I'm there.
Really cool. I love it. That peppered effect.
But you've done like a really lovely dove grey and then a really rich sort of burgundy colour.
Done the sort of the berry tweed and the grey tweed, the pearl grey as I like to call it. One of my favourite colours, and we've also done a basket weave Huddersfield Fine Worsteds semi-casual, semi-formal, however you want to put it, single-breasted blazer with patch pockets and cool. An outbreast well. And the idea is you don't have to commit to buying a berry suit, so it's going back to the three-way suit, bit more for your buck. You could buy the berry suit, you could buy the grey suit. You can wear the grey jacket with the berry trousers. You can wear the berry trousers with the grey, you know, and you can wear the.
You've got two pairs of trousers that work with the blazer.
And it seems to be going really well. So the thing we're obviously not trying to become a fashion brand, and we're not trying to become a ready to wear brand, because ultimately what we want to do is to steer people to what we do best, which is bespoke. But if they want to buy into the Benson and Clegg brand, they can do so by buying a garment for £695. It's a jacket. It's made in London. It's British cloth. It's cut by myself, you know, and it's very good value. And it's sort of, I had it when I was a kid, and I say a kid, but a teenager, and I became a bit obsessed with Paul Smith, but couldn't quite afford a Paul Smith, you know, suit. This was before I knew about Savoy, obviously. But, you know, buying that Paul Smith wallet, and the Paul Smith shirt, I felt like I was in the club, and that's what we're trying to target, you know, that demographic that can't necessarily afford bespoke, but they want something with sartorial elegance. They want something with a bit more.
And it's properly made as well. It's made in a tailoring workshop in East London.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great.
They're canvassed, and you know, there's. They're machine padded lapels, but they're padded lapels. You know, obviously you can't. We had to keep the price point down. So, but they're a wonderful garment. Come and have a look.
Yeah, do.
And we've got winter stuff off the same block. And the next project, which I will announce, is going to. I would like to do the ultimate ready to wear double breasted blazer with our own brass buttons on. That, you know, the pinnacle of a British blazer.
Yeah, as good as serious, it gets.
As good as it gets, ready to wear, but it's flattering on the figure. And I'd quite like to do that in sort of a mid-navy. And there's a little man inside me saying do it in a white or do it in an off-white.
Or do it in a cream flannel or something.
With a brass button. I think that would look really cool.
A bit naughty.
Absolutely.
Now, I was having this conversation with another tailor the other day. I've just come back from a week off in Porto with my lovely girlfriend.
Oh, very nice.
Cheeky holiday. Excellent. God, I needed it. And I didn't realise Portuguese are a very well-dressed bunch.
Oh, really?
They are.
Wow.
And I actually took a... I don't know if I should admit this, but I took a sneaky little phone video of a chap that walked by me because I was so smitten with his...
Stalker.
Smitten with his clobber.
Yeah.
But he had on a sort of... powder blue stroke RAF blue, you know, like mid,
nice, yeah.
Warm mid grey blue,
sort of grey hues in it, yeah.
Matte gabardine blazer with brass buttons and like cream gabs underneath it.
Oh,
it looked the nuts!
Wow,
and I've never seen a blazer that color before. And I want to do one like beautiful. A really, really soft, powdery RAF blue with a lot of grey in it.
And that worked,
the buttons really popped.
Well. Oh, beautiful.
That's food for thought.
Food for thought. Thank you, Al.
That's all right.
Send me the video.
You can have that. Yeah. Share that.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Well, Mr. Cross, I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity.
I felt, when we met a few months ago, like I had to.
Thank you.
There's a really great energy around the business at the moment. You guys are all lovely. And what you're doing is exciting.
Thank you.
So long may it continue.
Long may it continue. Indeed it will. Yeah.
Thanks, mate.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Well, there you are. Another episode done and dusted. Thank you, as always, to my wonderful producers. Birch is a London and New York-based creative agency that works on all manner of fascinating projects. Check out their work at thinkbirch.com. Thanks also to our spiffing sound editor and theme music composer, Joe Boyd. Listen to more of his work by following at This Is Joe Boyd. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate and review the podcast. It helps people to discover it and to ensure that we can keep making this for you. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. We really, really do appreciate it. And I'll leave you with a few titillating rapid-fire questions from our wonderful guest. Four questions for you. You've probably answered all of these during the course of our conversation. If you could only own one jacket, what would it be?
Straight jacket.
Oh.
A blazer.
I think it's got to be a blazer.
A proper blazer.
Because it's so versatile. You know, customers wear... Sorry, these are quick-fire questions. I am a waffler. But you can wear a blazer with anything. You know, that's it.
Who or what has inspired you the most over the years?
In life, in general, in tailoring?
Whatever comes into your head.
Bob Dylan.
Very
I would
cool.
say. Bob Dylan, definitely.
His music, his style.
His music, his style, his lyrics, his the way he is as a person. I just think he's got a serious attitude, which is just perfect, you know.
Right.
He's such an inspiration.
Bob Dylan suit next.
Absolutely. Please come, Bob.
Yeah. Best piece of advice you've ever received?
Best piece of advice. I know it's cliche and I know it's not very poetic, but I would say don't judge a book by its cover, because this trade has taught me that regardless of where you're from, you know, you cannot judge. A customer can walk in the door and judging by their appearance, you might think otherwise, that they, you know, they might not be able to afford bespoke, or there's so many interesting people out there. When I travel, I meet so many interesting people. I never, ever judge a book by its cover. And that's just, you know, nobody's told me that. It's just advice.
It's a rule for life.
It's a rule for life.
Last question. If you could send one message back to yourself 10 years ago, the younger version of yourself, what would you be? What would you say?
Meet Alex Chekivich earlier and get on series one. It would be... Just roll with it. I've not got any message back to myself 10 years ago. I didn't think I'd be here.
Just keep going.
It would be Ollie. It's going to be okay, mate. You're going to do it, you know.
Magic.
Enjoy the journey.
Thank you, mate.
Maybe lose a bit of weight. Maybe run a bit.
all great things.
All great things.
Thanks so much for
today's
chat.
Thank you, Alex. No, pleasure to have you here.
Good man.